Greeny with Mike Greenberg, the podcast.
All right, Greeny with you, ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. I just have to say something else about Brandon, who's sitting over there sipping on his smoothie.
This is unbelievable.
So Brandon, so Bubba and Cam, you'll appreciate this. He's the same one who told me today that my Wheat Thins aren't working and whatever it is, whatever this microphone thing is called.
Wheatstone.
Wheat Thins, whatever it is. He's the one who told me MEO is going to come get it fixed. No one knows what Wheatstone is and no one knows what MEO is. But so Brandon and I have a little thing where sometimes when I'm hungry during the show, I'll say to him, hey, can you order some food from the deli that we get food from? And it's sort of an I buy, you fly kind of thing, because while we're on, I don't have time to make the phone call. I don't have time to go over to security to pick up the food when it arrives, all that stuff. So Brandon handles the ordering, and I pay for whatever he gets and mine. So I say to him today, I'm kind of hungry. Would you mind getting me something? And he goes, yeah, no, I'm not doing it today. And I said, what? He goes, I'm just not hungry today. And I said, well, do you mind getting it for me? He said, yeah, I mind. And so he was just being kind of difficult about it, being a little obstinate about it. So mm-hmm. I sort of almost went to the begging him to do it for me, and he finally does. So now the food comes, and he sends me the check. And the check is over $33. There's no way in the world my little egg sandwich and soup cost $33. So Brandon, and he's sitting over there drinking a smoothie. And so clearly you ordered a smoothie as well, right?
Yes, I did.
Good for you, Brandon.
Oh, God.
I have no issue with you ordering the smoothie. Why did you give me such a hard time telling me you weren't going to get anything, and then you got the smoothie? He just wanted to tweak me a little bit.
And you did. You tweaked him successfully.
I feel tweaked. This is the same man.
You polished that thing off in like 3 minutes.
I know. Yeah, I know. This is his healthy lunch today. He just drank like a fruit smoothie in like 4 seconds. This is a man whose last diet consisted of wonton soup and Lifesavers. I'm not making that up. That was, Greeny, I'm going to lose a little weight. I'm just going to have wonton soup and Lifesavers. on my children, I'm not making that up.
I love that one. You're majoring in red food coloring. It's great for,
that was the great. That was a classic day. All right, here's why Bubba is the best producer in the world. Bubba found the soundbite from Gino Auriemma I was talking about. So this is April 7th, 2010, the morning after Auriemma and the UConn women win another chapter. I don't remember what number championship it was, like their fourth or their fifth or whatever it was, and finishing off another unbeaten season. And all the conversation was about, is their dominance bad for the sport? So I asked Gino Auriemma, what's your reaction to people who will say your domination is bad for the sport? And here's what he said.
Obviously, it's not bad because Stanford almost beat us last night. I think the longer we do this, the closer teams are going to get to the level that we're at. And I don't see how that can be bad. There's a difference between someone setting the bar and making everyone else ride to that bar and us all coming down to a mediocre level and pretending that there's parity or whatever the case may be. So I'm hoping that it's good for the game, that players realize how hard they have to work to be like Maya Moore and Tina Charles, and teams realize how hard they have to work to be as good as Connecticut was this year.
How great an answer is that? That's why it's always stuck in my head. That's, I mean, literally 14 years ago this week that he said that, and it was prescient. Here they are. Here's the proof in the pudding. And the reality is the sport has exploded as a result of it. We were just talking about it. There are these Q rating surveys that I haven't looked into, so I have no idea where they are. But I feel like, forget about Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark is a megastar. She's a legitimate American celebrity. She's one of the most famous people in the world of sports in America. The next most famous female basketball player in college is Angel Reese. I feel like Angel Reese's, I don't know if it's name recognition, face recognition, how it is, if people recognize a photo of you, recognize your name. I don't know how they judge these things, but I would say I feel like her level of fame is equivalent to that of, I think in baseball, you've got Shohei Ohtani and you've got Aaron Judge. Who's the next most famous baseball player? Is it someone like Justin Verlander? Is it someone like
Mike Trout?
I don't think it's Mike Trout. Mike Trout could walk in this room right now. How many people in this room would recognize him?
Just
you would, and I would.
You and me.
And that's it. And Brandon would be like, did you bring the smoothie? Brandon would be like, hey, Mike, excuse me, what is
Brandon
your name?
Brandon would tip him.
Yeah, exactly. Brandon would ask him if he's MEO and he's here to fix the Wheatstone. Like, Brandon will sooner recognize MEO than he would recognize Mike Trout, and that's not a knock on Brandon. It's not even a knock on Trout.
I get the point you're making.
It's just not his thing.
What is the...
Well, I'm saying it because you just talked about how great a job that the sport itself, however one defines that, has done in promoting their stars. Like, these women have become stars in ways that it just never happened before. And so when you said that, I'm thinking about other sports. Could they learn from that?
Yeah, I think what was also a point worth making is that the product itself, as evidenced by the number of teams that have won the championship since Connecticut last did, is so much better. And that is an area in which the men's game has really fallen behind. Look, your kid played AAU basketball, so I don't need to tell you this. But I hear from people all the time talking about how bad the coaching is at the highest levels of high school basketball. And to the contrary, how incredibly good it is in the women's game. Like, the women's pipeline leading all the way up to your junior or senior year in college basketball is so much better. I'm not suggesting that, like, the men's college basketball game or the NBA has deteriorated or something to that effect, but I do think that the health of the women's game is at least in part because the coaching of players in the high school ranks is really, really good, and it's just obvious. Like, people wouldn't be watching these games just because the players might be celebrities. People are watching these games because the games are so much better. Agree or disagree?
I think it's both. I think people I think that by watching them, these people have turned into celebrities that fans are genuinely invested in. Like, I think there is definitely an interest in that. There will be strong rooting interest tonight in the Iowa LSU game because of the celebrity of the personalities involved, and then the quality of play, which has risen so much and is in some ways what you're saying is fundamentally more attractive than the fundamentals that we see in the men's game. I think that's changing a little bit. The men's game is getting better. Here's what I can tell you about the AAU high school culture. And I was having this conversation with Legler actually last week, that we somewhere along the line arrived at a place where the only function of those teams, of the AAU teams and the high school teams, was for the players who were going to be pros to maximize their ability to be pros. And the minute that was compromised, they leave immediately. They switch from one AAU team to another AAU team, high school, we go to a different high school, reclassify, do all this stuff. So they aren't really part of a team. The team's entire function is to build that kid up. So, I mean, I've told you this before, but at Stevie's tournament, Stevie was not on teams where this was going on, but he would sometimes play at tournaments where there were players of this caliber. And these were days where, like, you'd arrive at 9 a.m. and you'd have 4 games, but you'd sometimes have 3 hours between them. Like, once I took the kids to a movie, like, I took the entire team to go see one of the Marvel movies, because they had like 4 hours between games. But most of the time you don't. You have like an hour here or there. So I would wander around and just at the gym and watch some of the other games. And you could tell the ones where the kids are going to be like high D1 players and all that stuff. They're the ones who are not playing defense. Like, they're literally, I don't mean to say they're not guarding anybody. They're not going back to the other side of the floor to play defense. They have no interest in the outcome of the game. It couldn't be less meaningful. And so I think that's where this thing has deteriorated to. Now, I feel like the pendulum is going back a little bit on that. I think that college basketball, if I were buying a stock in men's college basketball right now, I'd buy it. I wouldn't sell it. I think it's about to get much better because, look, the kids who are super, super, super gifted, like the real one and dones, they'll still go. But that's going to be like 3 players a year as opposed to 12 players a year, because those other 9 are going to come back to college because they can make money playing there. And there's going to be probably 40 or 50 players around the country who, instead of going to Europe, will stay and play another year of college. So if you're the best player on Northwestern, you and your lot in life is not to be an NBA player, then the minute you graduate, you go over to Europe. That's where you're going to be, and you start making money, and they make pretty good money over there. If you can make pretty good money over here for one more year, you'll do it, because you have a much better chance of becoming like someone you remember forever if you do it in the NCAA tournament. Then, you know, you're in this country, you're immediately forgotten if you're playing in Belgium or something like that. So I think that's who's going to stay. Those are the kids who are going to stay, not the ones who are going to become great NBA players, but But the ones that you're watching now, and you get excited by them. And then, you know, the transfer portal is what it is. I mean, you'll see different teams. Like UConn, this is not the same team they had that they won the championship with last year at all. But they're going to win the whole thing again. So I think college basketball in general, women's college basketball, if it was a stock, it would be Apple. It's growing so fast. And men's college basketball, I do also think, is a stock that has been shriveling for years, that has actually hit bottom and is going to start going back up.
I think you're right. And I think one of the learns that we can learn from the women's game is the enormous value of just staying power. When you're playing national TV games 2, 3, 4 years for these name brands, these college basketball universities for which there are millions of fans, there is enormous value in that. You know, it's one thing to go to the NBA and to get that contract as soon as you can, and to, you know, sit on the bench or get, you know, minutes for the Rockets for the first couple years of your career and eventually break through. It's a whole nother thing to have the college experience, to become a celebrity and enjoy that the way that we used to. I'm not so sure that the NBA game hasn't reached a place where that's going to be better for basically all but those three players that you just said. Couple that notion with the fact that Adam Silver lamented as much over the All-Star weekend, saying amateur basketball in this country needs to improve a lot. If we pour our resources into college basketball, the NBA will then get better as a result. And I think the fact that the NBA is saying that, I think your point is spot on.
Well, NIL, I think, helps them greatly in that. Because at the end of the day, you can pour whatever resources you want into whatever you want. The best players are going to go where the money is. So if there's money there, then they're going to be much more inclined to potentially stay. I think that does make all the sense in the world. And you're right. You know, it's funny. We had Christian Laettner on last week talking about the shot, the anniversary of the shot. And, of course, he made the comments that got a lot of attention about hating where the sport is now, NIL, transfer portal, whatever. He's entitled to his opinion. That's a whole different topic. But so I found myself watching the old video of that. Look at the number of players on Duke who you knew as well as you knew NBA players. Grant Hill. This is before they got to the pros. Grant Hill, Bobby Hurley, Christian Laettner, Thomas Hill. These guys were extraordinarily well-known commodity in college because they were there every single year. And the college teams were as well-known and as significant. And they were almost as famous as almost any of the NBA players of their time. I don't know that we'll get back to that. But it is a reminder of why the sport used to be so great before the only famous ones were the coaches. And I think it is moving a little bit back in that direction.
I just have one more note to reinforce your point. We're already seeing this in college football. The draft this year includes only 58 underclassmen entrants. That's the fewest number in a long time. Like you said, that is the direct impact of the NIL. Unless you're at the very top of the food chain, it behooves you to return to school. I'm hoping desperately that men's college basketball sees the same effect.
I think there's going to be a lot of it going in that direction, and it will be for the better. All right, we're going to get to the football here that I promised in a couple of minutes. We're Greeny, presented by Progressive Insurance. At Progressive, they're making things even easier. They'll help you bundle your home and car insurance together so you can save on both. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. The NFL conversation is next. We'll have Hembo's second question of the day.
What is the only NFL franchise, the only active NFL franchise, to not use a first-round draft pick on a quarterback at any point in the last 50 years? The only NFL franchise that has not drafted a round one quarterback in the last 50 years. That's the question.
Wow. I honestly, if you had said to me, is there any team that is not, does any team qualify for that? I would have guessed no.
Well, there's one.
There's one. And we'll find out who it is next on ESPN Radio. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had, happened in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Greeny today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Greeny, GREENY.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Greeny, the podcast.
Presented by Progressive Insurance. Bunch of football conversation to get to. And to get us there, we got some trivia. Kemba, we're racking our brains.
What is the only NFL franchise to not use a first-round draft pick on a quarterback at any point in the last 50 years?
The 50 years is an interesting cutoff because one of the teams I'm thinking of definitely used a first-round pick on a quarterback, but I think it would have been more than 50 years ago. I'm struggling. I want to have an answer here before I just listen to these guys, because I have three in my head that I cannot choose between, and I'm sure I'm overlooking someone obvious. But I'm just going to throw my guess out there. I'm going to say New Orleans. I'm going to say Archie Manning was longer than 50 years ago. They probably have used a first-round pick on a quarterback since then, but I can't think of one. Obviously, they got Breeze in a trade. They signed Carr. They were awful all those years in between. I don't have any confidence in it whatsoever, but that's the one I'm going with. Cam.
Yeah, Saints I have written down, and then I have two other teams written down. I'm pretty sure Flacco was a first-round pick. I'm not positive in that, so I crossed off the Ravens. And then the other one I had, which I'm going with, is the Seahawks.
Not only was Flacco a first-round pick, but so was Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, kind of forgot about him, too.
Yeah, so
glad
yeah.
I didn't go with them, but I'm going with
Seahawks.
Seattle.
Was another one I was thinking of. I mean, obviously, they got Russell where they got him. When did they draft Jim Zorn? Like,
I don't have any
recollection of what draft pick
Dave Craig,
he was.
I don't know where he
Craig
came
was
from.
A
Rick
journeyman.
Meyer was like the fifth overall pick or something.
Was he drafted by Seattle that high?
Yeah.
Okay, that'll make me feel better because I was considering them.
I mean, that.
Go ahead, Bubba.
Confidence not Seattle, but on the other hand, I have no idea. I'm going through, and I just can't figure out anyone.
The other one I was thinking about, Bubba, was the Rams.
Goff.
Yeah.
Oh, they drafted Goff number one. What am I talking about?
Okay, I said the same thing about the Ravens. Then. Like, it's just right. Hard to think of
yeah.
These guys.
All right. I'm on record. Cam's on record. What do you got, Bubs?
Yeah.
Move it along here.
I want to go. I'm trying to think. Am I missing something?
Just
here?
Say a team. You're killing me.
Raiders.
It's definitely not Raiders.
They picked Jamarcus Russell.
By the way, Jack is going with the Seahawks. Brandon going with the Saints.
Okay.
Okay, so we got good distribution.
And the correct answer is the Saints.
Yes!
I had them written down.
Yes! Yes, Brandon. Soup for everybody and a smoothie. That's it. I'm getting you another smoothie and another soup.
Archie Manning is the last quarterback they drafted in round one in the year 1971.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, 50 years. And so who did the Seahawks take?
They drafted Rick Meyer.
Yeah, I had forgotten him completely.
And Dan McGuire. In 1991.
It's Mark McGuire's brother.
With the 16th pick in the draft.
I would never have remembered that, but okay. But I got it right, and that's all that really matters.
Good fun.
All right, well done here. Pineapple Jack got it wrong?
Pineapple
that's
Jack
a good day. Pineapple Jack, who's wearing an Alabama basketball hoodie, by the way. I mean, what is a kid from
there?
New Jersey doing in an Alabama basketball hoodie?
My
it just
gosh.
Doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. First of all, every Alabama, I get it. They made the Final Four for the first time ever. Good for them. God bless them. Nate Oates, well done. But I'm just saying, like, I see Alabama football hoodies walking around every now and again. I don't see this is probably the first time in New York I've ever seen an Alabama basketball
hoodie. Not sure they made those.
No, and so you chose to wear it when they make, so that's like screaming, I'm not really a fan.
Mm-hmm.
I just happened, well then why are you wearing the shirt? Why do you have it? Like, what do you mean, because you have it? That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my entire life. You don't do something just because it's there. You don't wear something just because you have it. How does one acquire an Alabama basketball hoodie accidentally? I don't want to hear the story. Let's just move on.
It's definitely not worth sharing.
There's just no way in the world this story is worth telling. Well, let's do a green list.
The list is what determines who matters in this business.
Green List.
It's a confederacy of dunces that we're surrounded by every single day. All right. So I don't always have answers, but I always have questions. And today being April 1st, and by the way, there will be no April Fools going on here. I hate April Fools. I have enough anxiety in my life that I don't need to be checking every single news report to try and figure out, are they just kidding with me? Like, are you just trying to make me feel, oh, no, that happened? And then tell me you're only kidding. Like, that's a terrible. Who came up with the idea of April Fools? Like, what? I want to know the origin of that. Hemba, I want you to do some research right now. What is the origin of April Fools? Because as this is April 1st, we are now in the month of the draft. 3 weeks from Thursday, we will all be in Detroit. Round one should be fascinating. And here are the five biggest questions as we stand right now in the month of the draft.
Number five.
I'm going to just quickly touch on the receivers for you here. Marvin Harrison Jr. as the number one receiver in this draft has basically been written in pen for 2 years. I'm not 100% sure it's going to go that way. Like, these things are not a consensus. So all that's going to matter is one team's decision. But I think there are teams out there that would take Malik Nabers ahead of him.
Right now at ESPN Bet, Marvin Harrison Jr. is minus 600 to be the first wide receiver drafted. Malik Nabers plus 250. Those odds have gone in Nabers' favor since his ridiculous pro day.
Yeah.
So
he's so talented.
I still think that Harrison is overwhelmingly likely to be the first receiver off the board. But there is enough smoke around the Nabers hype to where I would not at all be surprised if you were right.
Yeah, so that's the question. Could he possibly surpass Harrison to become the first receiver taken? There are three superstar prospects at that position, because the third is Rome Odunze from Washington. And then there are going to be like four or five more of them that are going to go in round one. It's going to be a festival of wide receivers on the first night of the draft, but does Nabers surpass Harrison as the first?
Number four.
Number four, could Jaden Daniels actually be the first pick in this draft? Like, this is another one where I have to keep reminding myself, this is not a consensus. Maybe I'm just being influenced by, I have so many people on my shows telling me they would take Jaden Daniels ahead of Caleb Williams, that he does all the easy things better, that he's actually a better pocket passer, that there's so much cause for concern with Caleb Williams, that Jaden Daniels' lower half is way bigger than you think it is, so he's not as slight as he has been built up to be. Like, I just keep hearing that enough that I'm like, there are teams out there that would take him one. Now, all that matters is the Bears, unless they trade it. So I don't have any indication that Caleb Williams isn't going to be the first pick to the Bears. But I feel like if it wasn't the Bears making the pick, it might not be him.
Unless they trade it.
Well, that's the point.
That's the key word, my friend. That's the phrase that you use, and I agree. I think Caleb Williams is going to go 1-1. I'm not convinced that it will be the Bears that draft Caleb Williams 1-1. If they talk themselves into Jaden Daniels or anyone else, there is no obvious reason why they should not move back to 2 or even to 3, especially considering we have good reason to believe that Washington is in love with Caleb Williams, and they pick 2.
Yeah, but who are they trading the first pick to if not Washington?
I mean, most anyone else,
no,
I suppose.
But my point is, now you're not getting either of them. If you don't have the second pick in this draft, you don't guarantee yourself getting Jaden Daniels.
Question for you. Do you think there's a human being in the world, a credible human being in the world, that might have, say, Drake May as their QB1?
I know of one.
And how about J.J. McCarthy?
Well, I know of Jim Harbaugh.
What I'm saying is, you just told me this is not a consensus.
Right.
So we have no idea what Chicago actually thinks of these guys, and so we should not necessarily rule it out that they're not willing to move down a pick or even multiple picks to get the guy they want.
I'll say this. I will be floored if we get to the third pick in this draft and the Bears haven't made one yet.
Okay.
I could see them moving back one spot if they feel very confident Washington wants to come up to take Caleb Williams. because they then won't get jumped. You can't move down any further than that and be safe in getting the guy you want. Now, I don't know. You're going to walk away from Justin Fields and everything else, and you're going to say, I'll take who's left? Like, you got to have one guy you want and get him,
it's
right?
It's not about who's left. It's about who they like the most.
No, I get that. But you're not guaranteed of getting the guy you like the most if you don't have one of the first two picks.
You're not trading down.
But even to three.
To three, if you don't have good reason to believe that your guy will be there at three.
Well, who's your guy? Your guy better
I don't
be...
know who their guy is.
Well, and I don't know who you're giving that pick up to. I think that that's very risky business.
So you think the likeliest scenario, if Chicago does not pick 1-1, is that Washington goes first and then Chicago goes second and they get some extra stuff?
I will be really surprised if the Bears trade the pick at all. The only way that happens to me is if Caleb Williams really does give them signals that he doesn't want to come.
That's possible, right?
Which he could do. And if he wants to make it Washington, then I could see them trading the pick to Washington. Now, if he gives those signals to the Bears, maybe he gives them to Washington also, and the Commanders don't need to move up to get him. The one way or another, could Jaden Daniels surpass Caleb and be number one? I don't expect it, but that to me is question number four.
Number three.
Question number three is a similar one about two other players. Could J.J. McCarthy be one of the first three quarterbacks off the board? Like, for the longest time, I feel like it was the big three. Like it was, who are the big three in tennis? Djokovic and Nadal
and Federer.
And then there was Andy Murray, and he was sort of fourth, but he was definitively fourth. That's sort of where J.J. McCarthy has been. Could J.J. McCarthy move up and wind up being the third quarterback off the board?
All it takes is one team.
That's
and
what
I think
I mean.
J.J. McCarthy is, in the scouting world, close enough to Drake May to where that is definitely possible. I mean, teams have a scattershot evaluation on all those guys, so it would not stun me at all if some team was sipping that Jim Harbaugh Kool-Aid and said to themselves, we want J.J. McCarthy, we'll move up to three, we'll move heaven and earth for New England to trade us that pick. New England, I think, is going to be a team very motivated to move down. It wouldn't stun me at all if J.J. McCarthy went third.
So Orlovsky is one of the people whose opinions on this stuff I value the most. And I thought he had a really good comment on this morning on Get Up. He said, the thing about J.J. McCarthy is the floor is super high. Super high. He's done everything in college. He's played the most pro style. He's played for Harbaugh. He'll taken all the snaps under center. He checks all the, you know, boxes. He's going to be a good player. But the limitations on him are that he will probably not be a great one. Drake May is the opposite. Drake May feels like super high ceiling, super low floor. J.J. McCarthy feels like much higher floor, lower ceiling. Like Orlovsky made the comparison to Kirk Cousins today. If you used a top three pick in the NFL draft and from it you got Kirk Cousins' career, would you say that was a successful pick?
I would, yes.
Yeah, me too. So it feels safe. Now, Cousins has done it, obviously, now for three different teams. But let's just live in a world where that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
If he had been the second pick in Washington instead of RG3 and had his exact career, they wouldn't have let him go.
Yeah.
Right? He was a fourth-round pick, and that has sort of influenced the way he's been perceived all of this time. But J.J. McCarthy equals Kirk Cousins, whereas Drake May might equal Josh Allen, but he also might equal someone who is a huge disappointment.
McCarthy feels a little Mac Jonesy to me. Like, we saw Mac Jones effectively play a league average starter as a rookie, but that's the best he's probably ever going to play in his whole life. The good thing about J.J. McCarthy, if you're trying to talk yourself into him, is that he's still so young. I mean, he's so... Like, if you were to compare, for example, Michael Penix or Sam Howell at 21 years old to where McCarthy is right now, McCarthy is light years ahead of where those guys are. The evaluation just so tough because all he basically did this past year was hand the ball off and throw the ball on third down sometimes, which is a very difficult projection to make.
I think Drake May is that young too. Hold on, I'm just...
Yeah, he's
McCarthy
21.
McCarthy is 21, mm-hmm. I think, yeah.
But I think Drake May is already considered
six months older.
A first-tier, first-division prospect, whereas McCarthy is becoming one after the season ended. That's what I mean.
That's right. That's right.
The NFL draft process, again, my friend, is undefeated.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. He has somehow managed, since last playing a game, to become the apple of everybody's eye. All right, my top five questions.
Number two.
Are we going to have four quarterbacks drafted in round one? Or are we going to have five? Or are we going to have six? If I had to bet on it right now, I would bet we have six quarterbacks taken in round one. I would bet that Michael Penix is that guy who gets drafted like 31st by a team who trades into the back end of the first round to grab the quarterback and get that fifth year.
I want to make sure I was hearing this properly on Get Up this morning when Dan Orlovsky said that if Michael Penix Jr. had no health questions, he would be considered a top five pick overall, correct?
I do. I think so. I think that's right. Look, here's the thing on Michael Penix. In the notes that Dan wrote, he said if he was healthy, he would be X. And the point to make is he is healthy. Like, he's not injured right now. He just has a significant history of injuries.
Big time.
But if you watched his season and you watched his pro day, watch his high jump, watch his 40 time. He's not hurt.
He can rip it, too.
He's a freaking freakish athlete with the best arm and best touch in this class.
He can only really play from the pocket, though. I was crunching the numbers this morning. His numbers across the board are magnificent until you flush him out of the pocket. If you have the infrastructure for him, if you have the downfield passing ability and the offensive line that can block for 3 seconds, I wouldn't be surprised if Michael Penix was a stud from day one. But I think there's a very specific environment in which he can thrive. It's most definitely not plug and play like you might say for a higher end prospect with a wider diversity of skill.
And then number one.
Number one.
We can lose the music on this one. Who's trading up? Like, who's coming up? We're sitting here talking about all these quarterback trades, and I think there will be. I think Minnesota is an obvious candidate for that. They've already made an aggressive move that puts them in position for the big one. They've got two first-round picks now. That puts you in a spot where you can try and get all the way up to three, maybe try and get all the way up to two, at minimum get up to four and assure yourself getting one of the guys. Do the Giants really want to make sure they can get J.J. McCarthy and thus feel like they need to trade up? Listen, a month ago, I told you I think the Giants should draft Drake May. The Giants are the perfect team to draft Drake May. Let me make my case. Drake May needs to sit a year. Well, the Giants have Daniel Jones for another year. Daniel Jones' money isn't coming off their books. Daniel Jones isn't going anywhere. No one's trading for him. So Daniel Jones is going to be on your roster this year. Let him play quarterback. Let him try and rehabilitate his career. Let him play great. Let that become your problem, that Daniel Jones plays great and you have drafted Drake May waiting in the wings. If he doesn't, then after 1 year of learning under Brian Daboll, a.k.a. quarterback guru, you try and turn him into Josh Allen. I think that the Giants finding a way to get Drake May makes all the sense in the world. And if J.J. McCarthy jumps him, that could really open the door for
him. Yeah, I think that you're spot on when it comes to the Giants. I also think that you've identified the perfect team in Minnesota to jump up to three. I'm hearing some scuttle that Drake May might be their guy too. And I said it last week, I'll say it again. Minnesota is the most attractive environment that any rookie quarterback can enter in the NFL, bar none.
Because?
Number one.
Because of Justin Jefferson?
Because of Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison and two offensive tackles that are 28 or younger, and a 38-year-old head coach, Kevin O'Connell, who's done a great job there, who had the Rams in the Super Bowl 3 years ago as an OC. Those are the five people in the organization that I care about the most. If I'm a rookie quarterback and I'm set at those five spots, my two receivers, my two tackles, and my coach, that's a great spot to be in.
And they have Darnold, right?
And they have Darnold.
So, like, that's the guy, because everyone says May should not play immediately. Like, that you do not want to throw him on the
field. None of these guys should play immediately, but the NFL just won't let that happen.
But they will.
But, oh, yeah, they will.
Like the one.
And they'll be ruined.
That everyone, they don't necessarily be ruined. C.J. Stroud didn't get ruined.
No.
Well, some of them.
Bryce Young did.
Right. I don't know that he's ruined.
It's already too late for Bryce Young.
You think it's too late for Bryce Young?
Oh, yeah.
You are willing to throw in the towel on Bryce Young's career after one terrible year with bad coaching.
It's not too late for Bryce Young. I'm ready to say that already.
Really?
I think he was broken. I don't think he can play against men. And last year...
Well, if that's the case, then it's not because he got broken last year. It's because he never should have been the first pick in the first place.
Both are true. But when you put a quarterback in that environment, you can ruin him because what you can do is create bad habits, and it's such an important position mentally. Bryce Young was broken like a month into the season. I'm not so sure he can ever recover.
All right. It's an interesting conversation. There's a lot more to get to, and we will in a moment. It's Greeny on ESPN Radio. Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Greeny, the podcast. Greeny with Mike Greenberg.
So Hambo and I are just sitting here. I just asked him how his wife, Lizzie, is doing. She's on her way to Vegas to do some work on the WNBA final. She's involved in that. And then you mentioned a text that she sent to you.
She says, ugh, I forgot my wedding ring.
And she went where?
To Las Vegas.
Not what you want.
I think there's some cause for concern here. Lizzie didn't want to have her wedding ring with her as she went to Las Vegas, a city in which, as I think you know, what happens there stays there.
This is Greeny.
Question is, what happens in Phoenix? Hembo's wife is now set for another road trip. She's going to Phoenix, or she's going to the women? The women are going to Cleveland, right?
She's going to Phoenix.
She's going to Phoenix with the men.
She's with the men.
So she's covering the men. When does she leave?
She leaves on Wednesday morning.
Here's my question. Will she or will she not bring her ring? Do you believe she will arrive in Phoenix wearing a wedding ring?
I think that there is a better chance that she takes it with her this time as not to be suspicious, but doesn't wear it. So that she avoids she avoids the obvious questions, but also then gets to live like she did in Vegas, however she wants.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is questionable.
It is.
Right? Every part of this is questionable.
But look, I have Seth Greenberg. I've got Jay Williams. I've got Jay Billis. I've got boots on the ground this time. At least in Vegas. Like, in Vegas, I didn't really have any trustworthy sources. But here, there are men out here that I trust. And so I'll be keeping an eye through them, perhaps.
What was she in Vegas? I forget what event it was. What was she there for again?
I already forgot.
It was a WNBA.
Yes, that's right. It was the WNBA Finals.
But
Vegas Aces, yeah.
At the same time, I think we had like a Monday night football game where the Raiders won and Jimmy G had a decent game.
Oh, that's right.
And then no wedding ring and Jimmy G's around.
Yeah. That was a Jimmy G weekend.
So lucky for you, Jimmy G is not on UConn.
Yeah, but he's not on
anything.
Las Vegas anymore.
No.
And coincidence? I think not.
Well, he's on the Rams, so
he could also get to Phoenix if he wanted to.
Yeah, he probably will want to hang around over there. Okay, so I was going to get into something here before the Embiid news, Brooke. I wanted to do some NBA conversation. Maybe we should just go back to that for those of you who maybe haven't heard. Like literally 5 minutes before we went on the air was when Woj tweeted that Embiid is expected to play as soon as tomorrow against OKC, and they are certainly expecting to have him back this week. They have 7 games the Sixers do before the end of their season. They have almost no chance of playing their way out of the play-in. So they are basically locked in to a play-in scenario where they will play one game against Miami. The winner of that game will get Milwaukee in the first round. The loser of that game has a one-and-done scenario in the play-in, and then you're looking at Boston, which is pretty much the end. The really delicious scenario here is the Sixers with Embiid being the 7 and going to play Doc and the Bucks in the first round.
Inject it right here, right into my veins. That's what I want. As a Sixers fan, I want the opportunity with our new coach, Nick Nurse, to have the chance to beat our old coach, Doc Rivers. I think that Doc did a pretty good job in Philadelphia during the regular season. We saw enormous growth in Tyrese Maxey. We saw, of course, Joel Embiid play wonderfully well and win his first MVP. But it is no secret that Doc Rivers in the postseason has been a disaster ever since winning the title with the Boston Celtics 15 years ago. Last year, of course, being no exception, with two games to win one against Boston to go to the conference final for the first time in more than 20 years, and they choked like they always do. By the way, these Bucks, a team that you thought had a really clear path to the Eastern Conference Finals not long ago, kind of sputtered with Doc Rivers. They're 15-13 with Doc as their coach. They were 30-13 with Adrian Griffin, and they've been basically average on offense, average on defense, and awful in clutch games, and they were really good in those games with the first coach that they had. So it's not obvious to me that that team's in better shape than they were when they made that
move. Tough spot for Doc.
Ooh.
If he gets bounced out in the first round by Philly, that'd be a tough spot. How do you feel about it? My other Sixers fan here, Cam.
I am here for the matchup 100%. I, once again, will say I'm just skeptical. Like, you know, half of those Sixers collapses were with Doc, but half of them were not with Doc. So they have the ability to collapse without him, trust me. The one guy who's been there through it all is Embiid, and he's at least banged up almost every time we get to the playoffs. So he hasn't lived up to his potential in the playoffs. A lot of that is because he's not always 100%. It doesn't seem like he's going to be 100%, but if you can get 95% of Joel Embiid in the playoffs, the Sixers are a very, very, very good team, and they are not what their seed says they are. That doesn't mean that they aren't susceptible to another first-round disappointment. Either side, it's either a huge, you know, collapse for Doc if he loses to the Sixers, or if the Sixers lose to their former coach who they couldn't get over the hump with. Like, that storyline is set up perfectly. It's going to be massive, massive disappointment for whoever can't pull it off.
Cam, I want to push back on this because I think there is a conventional wisdom that everything that you said is true. But I think there is also a line of thinking, and this is the line of thinking that I employ, that Joel Embiid's injury might have been a blessing in disguise. And that is because Joel Embiid, at least to date, has played about 1,000 fewer minutes this year than he did last and the year before that. And if you look at the previous two seasons, Joel Embiid was an absolute regular season monster, like 30 points a game on 55% shooting type good. And then in the playoffs, both in terms of volume and efficiency, we see a dip in his production. I'm not so sure that the 76ers didn't nurse this to this exact period of time.
I see what you did
there. I'm not suggesting that they had nefarious motives, but I'm not so sure that Joel Embiid is not going to be in better condition from the standpoint of his health going into this thing, coming off of the injury because of the extraordinary toll in minutes that the last two seasons had on
him. So, Cam, he's saying they Nick nursed it to the exact spot they wanted it to be, and we'll see. And it would be, if I'm not mistaken, the first ever NBA playoff series between the doc and the nurse. we'd have a nurse on one side and the doctor on the other side.
Who's our next coach? We had doc, then nurse. You know, who's next? Like anesthesiologist? John anesthesiologist is next.
They're just bouncing around. What do you think? Do you think that Joel Embiid is likelier to be like the behemoth that he was in the regular season? Or are we going to see more of the typical, like, deteriorated Joel Embiid in the playoffs?
Here's the thing. Joel Embiid plays the game in such a way that in the playoffs, it can also be neutralized. When a team is preparing to deal with him for a seven-game series and not we're playing him Tuesday and someone else Wednesday, he doesn't do things that he's your classic big, right? He's your traditional big, and that's just a little bit different than having a guy like Jokic who is unstoppable no matter what you do.
So
I think that has contributed to it. But yes, do I think that, look, what I don't know is he was out with a knee injury.
Yeah, meniscus.
He wasn't out with like a wrist. Didn't he break his hand in the playoffs 2 years ago?
Every year in the playoffs, it's been something.
He's broken his face before in the playoffs. Like, he had an orbital fracture and was wearing a Phantom of the Opera mask one year. Like, this guy cannot get to the playoffs being healthy, which is why I don't hate the idea, Hembo. Mm-hmm. It's not just that he's not healthy. He also runs out of gas. So if he's more rested, that might be better, even though he's coming.
Well, then maybe it'll help him that there's a nurse and a doctor there than in these playoffs to help him out. If he's had a wrist, a face, and a knee.
Well, the doc hasn't helped the last couple of years, so.
By the way, Miami terrifies me. Like, they should everyone they play, because every year in the regular season, they kind of limp to the finish line, and then they just always wind up in the finals. So playing them in like a one game to be able to play the Bucks is not something I'd feel great about, nor should any team.
Well, that's what's going to happen. If you look at the standings, that part of it, those teams have kind of separated themselves out. So Philly, Miami, in the opener of the play-in feels as though it is preordained. Fun today. We'll see you tomorrow. ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Greeny the podcast. You can listen live each weekday morning at 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio. Or watch the show through the Watch tab on the ESPN app.
Also catch Greeny on Get Up, weekday mornings at 8 on ESPN, and also available wherever you get your podcasts.